Socialist punk ass 25 cent radio program. Ow! That would be us. Oh, by the way, Chuck wanted me to clear something up. The other night when I was talking about the asininity and idiocy of Christian fundamentalists, and all religious fundamentalists, I guess, who believe that the earth is 6,000 or 7,000 years old. I was talking about the 11,000 year old baby that was found in China. Chuck reminds me, the mummified child was found in Alaska. Thanks, Chuck. I hate it when I do that. I thought it was China, but, not so. Of course, 11,000 years ago, maybe Alaska was, no. Couldn't be, right? Breaking news, the Ohio Senate, by a vote of 17 to 16, approved a controversial bill, limiting collective bargaining rights of Ohio's public employees. It passed late this afternoon. In Ohio. I mean, Mary Harris, Mother Jones, spent time, I believe, organizing workers in Ohio. I can't believe this. I grew up in Ohio. Ohio was more pro-union than any state I have ever lived in. Not that there aren't some that are more pro-union. But six Republicans joined 10 Democrats opposing the measure. Can you believe that? Six Republicans said no to this, but it wasn't enough. This bill will preserve union negotiations for public employees. I like this. You can still bargain, but the law now, the bill now, will limit what they can talk about. God damn! How much longer? How much longer before we take to the streets and kick some right-wing ass? How much longer? You can still sit down and talk, Mr. and Ms. Worker, but we'll decide what you can talk about. The bill also will prohibit all public employees from striking and establish a new process to bring final resolution to contract disputes. What will that be? Where the corporate capitalist bosses come in and say, "Set your ass down, Joe and Judy Sixpack, this is what you're going to do." Really? Okay. The vote today took place in what the Toledo Blade reports as a relatively quiet state house. On Monday, about 9,000 protesters crowded the building. Senate Bill 5 is what it's titled, includes pay ranges for public employees but does not preserve automatic longevity or step increases. It introduces a merit system through which employees' pay could be increased based on their performance. Jump through the hoop, monkey. Jump through the hoop, monkey. How do you have your performance evaluated by someone or a committee that is goddamn determined that you are not going to make more money? How do you do that? How do you have your performance evaluated by a boss whose function may be to make certain you do not get any more money. How does that work, dumbasses in the Ohio Senate? Oh, my God. Senate Bill 5. I don't need to comment on this too much. I just wanted to let you know it had passed. I don't know how it works in the Ohio House, if there is such a thing. It's been a long time since I lived there. I left for a very simple reason. Ohio started to come into the thrall of right-wing monsters, and it is now, apparently, a breeding ground for these sons of bitches. Okay, well, let's see what happens. I'm wondering if, since the unions are all but dead where it concerns private employees in the private sector, I'm wondering how long it will be before the public employees call a massive strike and shut Ohio down. And then I'm wondering how long it'll be when workers who are not unionized see this and say, we join you. How long? What's it going to take? How many times does the working class have to be kicked right in the goddamn face in this capitalist corporate America that is spiraling into the pocketbooks of people like the Koch brothers? How long? Come on. Come on, workers. You don't have a whole lot of chances left. The Army has filed 22 new counts against Bradley Manning. Among them, an offense for which he could be executed. But the government says it will not seek the death penalty. The government? That would be the Obama administration? The government? Really? The charges that were filed yesterday but disclosed just today are... One charge of aiding the enemy. That's the one where they can stand you against the wall and put a couple of bullets through your chest. Aiding the enemy? Who is the enemy? Who is the enemy that was aided? Five counts of theft of public property or records. Two counts of computer fraud, eight counts of transmitting defense information in violation of the Espionage Act, and a count of wrongfully causing intelligence to be published on the Internet, knowing it would be accessible to the enemy. Ooh, the enemy. There it is again, the enemy. Five additional charges are for violating Army computer security regulations. What they are saying, what the Justice Department, well, I guess not the Justice Department. I wonder why they said government, a capital offense for which the government said it would not seek the death penalty. This is up to the military, isn't it? According to the Army, the prosecution team will not seek the death penalty for the capital offense, but under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the presiding judge ultimately decides what charges to refer to court-martial and whether to impose the death penalty. What they have planned for Bradley Manning, see, you do not even allow the military-industrial complex in this country to even think for a moment that you may be screwing with their attempts to maintain the military security state that we have become. If they even think you might be involved. No, nobody is. Bradley Manning has not come to trial. A 22-year-old kid is going to be you. This is going to be like the Dreyfus case. What do you want to bet? This is going to be like, you don't know what the Dreyfus case is? Okay, look it up while we're in a break here. Okay, we're going to take a break and come back. Dreyfus, it was in France. Dreyfuss. Look it up. We'll be right back.
ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
So 21 past the hour. Frank Rich is leaving the New York Times. You hear about that? God, every Sunday when I get the Times, I immediately go to Week in Review and turn to Rich's column. It's by mutual agreement. He is going to go to New York Magazine, not the New Yorker. There's a difference. New York Magazine is a city magazine. He'll write a column once a month, become editor-at-large of a new section built around his column. The magazine said he would also be a commentator on his website, nymag.com. This appears really to be by mutual agreement. I think Frank Rich just decided that he wanted to do something other than write a column, a weekly column. And he also said that... And I know what he's talking about because I used to do this, that the column format, even as much space as Frank had, the column format is limiting. And he wants to say more. So, Frank Rich, I think March 13th. Is that right? March 13th is the last issue that he will be in. Yeah. Rich's last column for the Times run on March 13th. Now, some good news. The Times also announced that Joe Nocera, do you ever read his column? He writes in the business section. This guy is really good. He writes the Saturday Talking Business column. He's going to join the opinion pages as a twice-weekly columnist. I like Joe Nocera. I like his ability to go after these corporate sons of bitches in a way that I wish I could. He's much more effective, and he doesn't cuss. Excuse me. All right, did everybody go look up the Dreyfus Affair? I hope you did. Bradley Manning is now facing 22 additional charges. The Dreyfus Affair was in around the turn of the last century. It involved the conviction for treason of Captain Alfred Dreyfus, a young French artillery officer who was a Jew. He was of Alsatian Jewish descent. I don't know if he was a practicing Jew or not, but he was sentenced to life imprisonment for allegedly having communicated French military secrets to the German embassy in Paris. And Dreyfus was sent to the penal colony at Devil's Island in French Guiana and placed in solitary confinement. Well, the punchline, it turned out he was absolutely innocent. This is clearly a case of anti-Semitism. Around the 1900s, at the beginning of that century. After serving 2 years in solitary, evidence came to light, identifying somebody else as the real culprit. But what happened was high-ranking military officials in the French military suppressed the evidence. And the new guy, Ferdinand Esterhazy, was acquitted after the second day of his trial. Instead of being exonerated, Dreyfus was further accused by the army on the basis of false documents fabricated by a French counterintelligence officer, blah, 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 blah. And so it went. Until finally, it was proven that Dreyfus was innocent. The Dreyfus Affair. Bradley Manning is the new Alfred Dreyfus. Wouldn't you think? Huh? 22... new charges. 22 new charges against Bradley Manning. And what did Bradley Manning do? He exposed murder. Murder. Absolute murder. There's no other way to describe if Bradley Manning really was responsible for releasing the videotape and other documents to WikiLeaks. Who knows? You never know anymore, do you? Somebody wrote to me and said, a couple people have written to me and said, the whole WikiLeaks thing is an Israeli plot. It's always the Jews, right? It's always the Jews or the Muslims. Oh, my God. Oh, spare me. Spare me. Spare me. What else we got? Well, we got a lot of stuff. I don't know if you saw ABC News the other night. The They were doing something called Made in America. It's a series. And David Muir, isn't he cute? Don't you want to just eat David Muir alive? I mean, that guy is so cute. Anyway, David Muir and his producer, they went to... Well, I'll tell you later. But there's some hypocrisy on the part of ABC World News with Diane Sawyer that is hip deep about this this segment Made in America or this series. And also another anti-gay pastor, this guy, what's his name? Grant Storms. How do you like that name? Grant Storms. He was busted at a park in Metairie, Louisiana. He was indeed. Last Friday afternoon, where a bunch of kids were out playing, and he was sitting in his car masturbating. Yeah, so another fundamentalist, gay-hating preacher sitting in his car masturbating as he watched little children, because, you know, that was something very sexual to him. Little kids running around and, you know. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So, I get this email from Carol in Los Angeles. I think it's Carol, you know, spelled like a guy. Carol writes, if you're female, I'm sorry. Carol in Las Vegas writes, in 1972, my sociology 101 class showed us a film about a rat colony in a cage. At first, there was plenty of space for all and just the right amount of food and water. They then cut the food and water in half and tripled the population of rats. You know where this is going, right? The rats turned on each other and tore their home apart and started killing each other. This is exactly what the corporate fascist pigs have done to us. As the programs that give a leg up to the poor are eliminated, the unemployed are left stranded, and what is left of the working class's wages are slashed, the pressure will become unbearable. Unlike Hitler, these fascists are going to let most of the population do the work for them. If the protests that have started in Wisconsin don't spark a massive change throughout the entire country, we'd better follow Prairie 2's advice about the canned goods. But you might want to add ammo to that list. If the lights do go out, Mike, you can have Rush and Glenn. But only if you get to them before I do. Okay. It'll be a foot race. Yeah, rats in a cage. Okay, the ABC Made in America hypocrisy. This is from fair.org. It's under one of their action alerts. ABC World News of Diane Sawyer kicked off their Made in America series on February 28th, and it's to encourage consumers to buy U.S.-made products in order to spur job growth. That's a great idea. I mean, who doesn't believe in that? But why focus on consumers, Fair.org asks, and not major corporations like ABC parent Disney, who are the ones who actually choose to manufacture products overseas? Huh? Now, you remember, the February 28th report, it was a Monday, consisted of reporter David Muir touring one family's home, discovering that the vast majority, hell, looked to me like everything, all the family's possessions are not made in the United States. And Muir even checked the children's toys, only to discover, you can tell David doesn't have kids or a family, only to discover that the toys are made there too. Huh? Oh my goodness, really? And as Fair says, consumers, of course, don't choose where the products offered in their local stores are manufactured. Instead of focusing on what consumers should do with their limited choices, why not focus on the much more powerful decisions made by major corporations like Disney? Jeff Cohen, who's the founder of Fair, checked the label at the Disney Store website. Let's go to their website. What would be more helpful is a TV news series that scrutinizes the powerful U.S. corporations that make decisions every day, determining what products mainstream America have access to. At the DisneyStore.com, which is called official site for Disney merchandise, the first 40 products that the writer of this action alert took a look at are all listed as imported. Well, of course. As Muir put it at the close of the segment, quote, economists say if we spent 1% more than what we're spending now on American goods, we could create 200,000 jobs immediately. And I remember sitting there and Diane Sawyer said, well, that's 18 cents a day. That's all. 18 cents a day, each American consumer. 18 cents a day more for an American-made product. The following night, last night, Sawyer reiterated that point, telling viewers that spending just $64 a year, 18 cents a day, will create 200,000 U.S. jobs. Ta-da! So why is the focus on consumers and not corporations? Will the ABC series talk about Disney, whose reliance on cheap labor is well documented? The company's history is not encouraging. As Fair pointed out, a decade ago, ABC News killed critical investigations into Disney theme parks and sweatshops, evidence of a larger pattern. One ABC producer says that the need to avoid news stories that might displease Disney, quote, comes up all the time because no one here wants to piss off the bosses, end quote. The closest ABC came on February 28th, Monday, to mentioning Disney was noting that the family being profiled lives on Snow White Drive. Oh, my God. Anyway, you can comment on this. You go to abcnews.go.com. abcnews.go.com. Go to World News Tonight and find the Made in America series, and you can leave a comment if you want to. abcnews.go.com/worldnewstonight, or WNT, however it's listed. Now, tonight, on tonight's segment, I don't know if you saw it, but tonight's segment, David Muir and his producer, they took everything out of this couple's house, family's house. I think there was a couple of kids and a dog and mom and dad. Took everything out of the family's house and said they would replace it with Made in America products, which they did. Everything. The appliances. What are those real expensive kitchen appliances, Kathy? Viking. Those are made in American South. They're made here. Now, they don't mention the fact that they're made with non-union labor, but everything that they replaced in the house was made in America. And you just kind of sit there and go, well, I'll be damned. Then why aren't these products on the shelves in Sears and Macy's and Home Depot and Walmart? You know, why aren't they available? Oh, and the kicker to the story, David Muir sat there and gleefully told his boss, Diane Sawyer, well, Diane, you'd be surprised to find out that we spent less on all this stuff than what the family had spent to get the made overseas stuff. I'll tell you tomorrow night how much we spent. Well, Diane was just so excited. I thought she was going to actually change the expression on her face, which I don't think she can do. But we'll find out tomorrow night how much this family saved. Actually, the family didn't spend anything. I'm sure they had a great deal with ABC News. Let us come into your house and take everything out. We'll throw it in the garbage once we prove to people that it was made in different countries. And then we'll replace everything, yada, yada, yada. And you get all this stuff free, and it's brand new, and it smells good. How about that? And I'm sure the family went, oh, Jesus, I knew if we went to church every day that something like this would happen. Ah! So we'll find out. Okay. Anti-gay Pastor Grant Storms arrested for masturbating at a playground full of children. From Crooks and Liars. And this is from a website in New Orleans. A conservative pastor named Grant Storms, who made a career out of attacking gays in the French Quarter, was arrested on charges that appear to make him one sick man. Here's the way it's reported in New Orleans. Reverend Grant Storms, the Christian fundamentalist known for his bullhorn protests at the Southern Decadence Festival in the French Quarter, was arrested. If you don't know what the Southern Decadence Festival is, that's when the homosexuals invade the city and have a great big party. Oh, by the way, you know, I forgot to mention that this hour is sponsored by Val Schmidt. I forgot to mention, we met him on the cruise. Great guy. A Russian, American, but he's from Russia. He says, I sponsored this hour in solidarity with the public unions of Wisconsin. Power to the people. Please visit Club Orlov, CLUBORLOV.com, and check out the book Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov. Val gave me that book on the cruise, and I'm just about finished with it, Val. And I'm telling you, Dmitry Orlov, I'm digressing here, but I got to say this, I think I'm going to talk about Val a little bit next hour. Next hour is sponsored by Gordon in Oklahoma City, so I'm just going to kind of match him up a little bit here. But the book, Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov, O-R-L-O-V, you need to read it. It's written by a guy, Dmitry, who he's Russian, he watched the Soviet Union collapse and what happened, how the people reacted and what happened afterwards. And he is now an American citizen, and he's watching the U.S. Collapse in much the same way, different reasons, different circumstances, but much the same way that the Soviet Union collapsed. And he has some advice for us Americans, his fellow Americans now, that pretty much corresponds with a lot of the stuff that Prairie 2 has been saying on this program over the past two or three years. So, just go to Club Orlov, Club, O-R-L-O-V, ClubOrlov.com, and check out the book, Reinventing Collapse. And Val, we'll talk about you some more as soon as we come back. Stay with us. And then I'll get back to the masturbating, fundamentalist preacher who goes to a playground full of children, sits in his car, and wanks. Oh, my God. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. And this hour brought to you by Val Schmidt, who sponsors the hour in solidarity with the public unions of Wisconsin. Power to the people, Val writes. Please visit Club Orlov. ORLOV.com. Check out the book Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov. Now, from the sublime to the sickening, Reverend Grant Storms. You like that name? The Christian fundamentalist who goes down to the French Quarter in New Orleans periodically and screams at gay folk, which he certainly has a right to do, doesn't he? Huh? The Supreme Court said these monstrous sons of bitches from from Kansas have a right to go to people's funerals and scream the same stuff. Anyway, he was arrested, Grant Storms, on a charge of masturbating at a Metairie, Louisiana park Friday afternoon. He's 53. He was taken into custody at La Frenier Park after two women reported seeing him masturbating in the driver's seat of his van, which was parked near the carousel and a playground. Isn't that just sick? That's according to a Jefferson Parish Sheriff's report. The report went on. The first woman told deputies she was taking her children to the playground and parked next to the van at about noon. As she was walking around her own vehicle, she noticed the van windows were down, and the occupant was looking at the playground area that contained children playing with his zipper down, the report said. The woman noted that he was masturbating and quickly ushered her children out of her car. She told a second woman who walked to the van and also spotted the man masturbating, the report said. The second witness told deputies that the driver saw her and tried to conceal the zipper area of his pants with his hand. Storms told deputies that actually what was going on, he was having lunch at the park and he decided to pee into a bottle instead of going over there to the restroom. Deputies booked him, charged him with obscenity. Bond set at $5,000. He was released from the Jefferson Parish Correctional Center because of jail crowding. That bitch. Storms could not be reached for comment Monday. He is a self-styled Christian patriot. We're going to kill, who are we killing today? The queers and the liberals. The unions, the communists, and Storms led a small West Bank congregation called, that's not West Bank in, you know, but in New Orleans, called the Reformers Church, and for 10 years hosted the Reformer radio show on WSHO. He's especially known for arming his followers with bullhorns, Bibles, and picket signs to protest the gay festival held in the French Quarter. Storms grabbed national attention. In 2003, really I never heard of this geek bastard before, with his failed attempt to shut down what Southern Decadence organizer Chuck Robinson called a peaceful festival that celebrates gay and alternative lifestyles. Bill O'Reilly has told his audience, you know, over at the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Organization, Bill O'Reilly has told his audience that being part of the family values team makes it harder for Republicans to live up to their conservative right-wing religious platform, and that's why so many of them fail. Yeah, that explains hanging out at a park for kids and masturbating, doesn't it, Bill? The pastor has now recanted his urination excuse. Oh, God. Sorry, the story is sickening, but the hypocrisy has to be covered, right? Sorry. Too many of these gay bashers and phony Christian patriots are given a big platform to pollute everything in this country. The air we breathe, they are scum, they are swine, they are hypocrites, they are... They deserve to be exposed, and if it's a little bit difficult to listen to, put your hands over your ears and go, nah, I'm a Republican, I'm a Republican, I'm a Republican, I'm a Republican. Right? The Supreme Court ruled today, 8-1, that the First Amendment protects these scum from the Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas, someplace in Kansas. I think it's from hell, Kansas. There must be a portal in Kansas open. Some demon came out, you know, some demon, and left the portal open, and right behind him scampers this Westboro Baptist Church freak and his little family. But anyway, Supreme Court ruled 8-1. That they have a constitutional right to do this kind of stuff. Writing for the majority, John Roberts wrote, "Speech is powerful. It can stir people to action, move them to tears of both joy and sorrow, and, as it did here, in this case, inflict great pain. But under the First Amendment," he went on, "we cannot react to that pain by punishing the speaker. Instead, the national commitment to free speech," he said, "requires protection," quote, "of even hurtful speech on public issues to ensure that we do not stifle public debate," end quote. Okay, you know, I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to argue with it. But I'd like to know what public debate is going on with this filth, this toe jam that disguises itself as humans from Westboro Baptist Church. What discussion? They stand there and say that their demonic God is punishing America because homosexual people live here and we're not burning them at the stake. What kind of a discussion is that? I'd like to have a discussion with Pastor Phelps. I'd go so far, Pastor Phelps, that... we'll be right back. Stick around. Thanks, Val. Stick around. We'll be right back. I always said that. I'm Mike Malloy. Is sponsored by Gordon in Oklahoma City. He invites those who are so inclined to please consider humanism. Thank you, Gordon. Gordon, we met Gordon, oh my God, when was that? I was on that first cruise, right? I want you to go to, years ago, I want you to go to Gordon's, where he has a blog site too. He writes and stuff. So I want you to go to his website, his blog site, okay? Write this down, Gordon, OKC, like Oklahoma City, Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, OKC, Gordon, OKC, at WordPress.com, WordPress.com. You know that ISP. Gordon OKC at WordPress.com. Check it out. Gordon is the sponsor of this hour. Thank you, Gordon. And I want to go back just momentarily to Val, who sponsored last hour. We met Val on this Progressive Voices cruise a month ago. Val and his wife, they're both from Russia and American citizens now, right, Val? And while we're on the cruise, he gave me this book, Reinventing Collapse, paperback, by Dmitry Orlov. And, you know, he said, you know, you should read this. Usually when people give me books, I try my damnedest to read them. I really do. And I'll get through the first chapter or two and set it aside. I'll get back to it. The nightstand next to my bed has about 15 books on it. Hey. But I started reading this one on the cruise, and a little bit every single day, because it's difficult to digest all of this at once. But it was this Dmitry Orlov was a Soviet citizen, and he watched the Soviet Union break up and become the Russian Federation. And what happened to the people that were part of the USSR, what happened to them when the Soviet Union collapsed? And now that he's an American, he sees parallels. He sees differences, too, but he sees parallels between what happened in the Soviet Union, what happened in the United States. I have about 15 pages of this book left to read, and while it is, there are parts of it are just funny as hell. I mean, the guy really is a good writer in English. He's an excellent writer where it concerns, you know, English obviously is his second language. But if you get a chance, go to that website that Val talked about, Club Orlov, Club O-R-L-O-V, ClubOrlov.com, and take a look at that book, Reinventing Collapse. Reinventing Collapse. I think it's, you know, like a must read. It's not that, as my almost 7-year-old daughter says, it's not that many pages. I'm not saying it's a quick read. It's not, because as you get into this book and you read it, it's one of those books that really, it really grabs you. I mean, it really grabs you. So check it out if you choose to. And don't forget to go to Gordon's website and check out what he writes about. That's GordonOKC at WordPress.com. Thanks to both these men for sponsoring last hour and this hour. I appreciate it very much. Oh, and Val's wife, Marina, who was reading, she had a Kindle, and she was reading in Russian, of course. I'm standing here looking over her shoulder, fascinated with the Russian language. I should speak Russian as good as these two speak English, right? The ruling, the 8-1 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, the majority report written by the Chief Justice John Roberts about the swine at this Christian church. And the ruling, which said, yeah, they have a right to spew their hatred and their ignorance, mostly their ignorance, the religious bigotry and so on and so forth. These people are really, I mean, they're right down there. It's the stuff that you get on the bottom of your shoe when you're walking down Madison Avenue in Midtown Manhattan, and you get stuff on the bottom of your shoe, and you go, oh, God, and you go to the curb and scrape it off. That's Mr. Phelps and his family at the Westboro Baptist Church. But the Supreme Court had to rule this way, because if they didn't, then everybody who works for the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization would also be silenced, because they are doing the same kind of lies, putrid speech, deception, deceit, sickness that Mr. Phelps is doing and his gang. So this ruling, and I think John Roberts knew this when he wrote for the majority, in ruling that these swine could continue to speak, he is ruling in favor also of the swine at the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Network, who spend their entire days, all of their days, putting filthy propaganda into public discourse. So, no point in talking too much about the Reverend Phelps. It's one of these days, I just have a feeling that something terrible is going to happen to these people. I really do. I mean, you can stick your finger in the eye of grieving families who gather to bury a family member. You can stick your finger in their eye only so many times until finally somebody decides that an eye for an eye may leave everybody blind, but there is immense satisfaction in getting to that point. Well, if not satisfaction, certainly release. So the Reverend Phelps and his twisted, incestuous family should, I don't know, just watch out. You know, be careful. Or you're going to see the abyss probably a lot sooner than you want to. You know, there are a lot of people here on planet Earth that you have to convince about your sickness and your hatred and your fear and your perversion. So be careful, because you never know, you know? I mentioned this last night. I want to get to it, well, in a minute, because there's something more important. Yeah, something more important. We have a break coming up here in a couple of seconds when we come back. Nine boys collecting firewood to heat their homes in the eastern Afghanistan mountains were butchered, killed, murdered by a NATO helicopter gunship who, quote, mistook them for insurgents, end quote. It's according to a statement today by NATO, which apologized for the mistake. We're going to talk about that when we come back. All right? Stay with us. Nothing you can see that isn't shown. No way you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. City. His website, Tom, writes to me and says it is gordonokc.wordpress.com. gordonokc.wordpress.com. I had said at WordPress. No. gordonokc.wordpress.com. Check out the website. Gordon is our sponsor this hour. Thanks, Tom. What else we got? Oh, yeah. What else we got? That sounds very flip for a topic like this. There were nine little boys, age 9 to 15. They were near their homes in Afghanistan, in eastern Afghanistan, in the mountains. 9 years old to 15 years old, they were gathering firewood to heat their homes when they were butchered, murdered, slaughtered, destroyed, killed by what's being described as a NATO gunship. NATO helicopter gunners. NATO apologized for the mistake. A mistake. General David Petraeus, our viceroy in Afghanistan, issued a statement. He said the boys had been misidentified as the attackers of a NATO base earlier in the day. How do you do that? How do you misidentify a 9-year-old? I have a child who's almost 7. I would be hard-pressed from the insides of a helicopter gunship to misidentify a 9-year-old as being someone who attacked a NATO installation earlier in the day. I got to be careful here. I got to be careful what I say now. One boy survived. He's 11. He said his mother had told him to go out with the other boys to collect firewood because, quote, the weather is very cold now, end quote. Himad is his name. He said, quote, we were almost done collecting wood when suddenly we saw the helicopters come. There were two of them. The helicopters hovered over Skandus and we saw a green flash from the helicopters. Then they flew back high up and in a second round they hovered over us and started shooting. They fired a rocket which landed on a tree. The tree branches fell over me and shrapnel hit my right hand and my side. The tree saved the boy's life by covering him so that he could not be seen by the helicopters. He said the helicopters, quote, shot the boys one after another, end quote. General Petraeus pledged to investigate the attack and to take disciplinary action, if appropriate. Disciplinary action. How do you discipline someone? What discipline? What was the discipline for killing, for butchering, for murdering 9 boys? What do you do? Go to your room? Time out? Do you file charges like the charges filed against Army Specialist Bradley Manning, one of which carries the death penalty? Do you file charges against these people who butchered 9 children, one after the other, according to the one survivor? Do you charge them with anything? Or do you just issue an apology? What do you do? Petraeus said, quote, we are deeply sorry for this tragedy and apologize to the members of the Afghan government. Why? The people of Afghanistan. Why? And most importantly, the surviving family members of those killed by our actions. These deaths should have never happened. End quote. This is the third instance in 2 weeks in which NATO has been accused of killing civilians. NATO strongly disputes one of those reports. But another, the killing of an Afghan soldier and his family, also was described as an accident. The attack on the boys occurred high in the mountains in the Peck Valley of Kunar province. American troops are preparing to close their bases in the valley in the next several weeks, in part because their presence has vexed. How often do you see that word? Vexed the villagers, who would prefer to be left alone. They'd prefer to be left alone? The Afghan villagers in this particular, they prefer to be left alone. The area is poor, and the only major road was built to service Forward Operating Base Blessing. Forward Operating Base Blessing. You want sarcasm? You want snotty attitude? You want imperialist, aggressive language? Establish a base from which you're going to kill children and name it Blessing.
Fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
At 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gordon in Oklahoma City. He invites those who are so inclined to please consider humanism. That's a great idea, Gordon. Thanks, Gordon. And don't forget to go to his website, blog site, website, whatever. Regarding the children that we butchered yesterday, well, we didn't, but we're butchered in our name. That's why we have an expeditionary force, invading force, 100,000, whatever it is, and all those filthy contractors in Afghanistan. Jeanette says, how many new enemies do we have to create before it's enough? You know, murdering nine boys in a society, any society, but especially a tribal society like that in Afghanistan, especially like the society in this area of Afghanistan, to murder nine boys and then issue an apology is madness. To think that that apology is all it takes. The there was a rocket attack on Forward Operating Base Blessing on Tuesday. And that led to a helicopter search for the insurgents. Insurgents. We invade somebody else's country, we murder their people, and when they resist, we call them insurgents. Or, in the case of the Israeli occupation of Palestine, we call those people terrorists. A helicopter search for the insurgents who may have attacked Forward Operating Base Blessing. This is all according to NATO. The base is surrounded by mountains and is the frequent target of Taliban fighters who shoot down on it from the Rocky Heights. Do you not immediately wonder what tactical genius told the troops to set up in a valley where they are sitting ducks and targets for people on high ground? Have they never read The Art of War? Do they not know who Sun Tzu is? The NATO statement said, quote, the helicopters returned fire at the assessed point of origin with indirect and aerial fire. Regrettably, there appears to have been an error in the handoff between identifying the location of the insurgents and the attack helicopters that carried out subsequent operations. How do you like that? How do you like that, huh? How do you like that language? Regrettably, there appears to have been an error in the handoff between identifying the location of the insurgents and the attack helicopters that carried out subsequent operations. we really are sorry. I mean, you know, stuff happens when you are fighting for truth, justice, mom, apple pie, and corporate America. Things happen, and, you know, people die. And in this case, nine little boys died. Well, okay, the 15-year-old wasn't little, but you know what we're saying. We certainly do regret it, don't we, huh? Villagers who heard the gunfire were worried when the children didn't return home. So they went to look for them. The local people said the boys had been out since the morning. Ashabuddin, a shopkeeper from Manogai, a nearby village whose nephew Khalid was among those killed, said, quote, as soon as we heard about the attacks on the village's children, all the village men rushed to the mountains to find out what really happened. Finally, we found the dead bodies. Some of the dead bodies were really badly chopped up by the rockets. The head of a child was missing. Others were missing limbs. The head of a child was missing. Others were missing limbs. We tried to find the body pieces and put them together, Asha Budin added. We tried to find the body pieces and put them together. As it was getting late, we brought down the bodies in a rope bed. We buried them in the village's cemetery. The children were all from poor families. Otherwise, no one would send their sons up to the mountains. Despite the known threats from both insurgents and Americans. End quote. Some of the dead bodies were badly chopped up by the rockets. The head of a child was missing. Others were missing limbs. We tried to find the body pieces and put them together, said the uncle. Khalid, 14, Asha Budin's nephew, was the only male in the family, Asha Budin said. Quote, he was studying in sixth grade of the orphanage school and working because his father died 4 years ago. His father was a day laborer. He has 13 sisters and two mothers. He was the sole breadwinner of the family. I don't know what would happen to his family, to his sisters and mothers. They're all female and poor. End quote. The American puppet and president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, who was in London for an official visit, condemned the attack, quote, in the strongest terms possible, end quote. Calling it ruthless, he questioned whether the Western goals of combating terrorism and securing Afghanistan could be achieved if civilians continue to die. More than 200 people gathered in the village on Wednesday today to protest the boys' deaths, witnesses said. Waving white flags, they shouted, death, death to America, and death to Obama and his colleagues and associates. Death, death to America. Death to Obama and his colleagues and associates, the villagers cried. Asha Budin, whose nephew Khalid was among those killed, said, quote, finally we found the dead bodies. Some of the dead bodies of the children were really badly chopped up by the rockets. The head of a child was missing. Others were missing limbs. We tried to find the body parts and put them together. We carried them in a rope basket down the mountain so that we could bury them. What would you do? I'm just curious. You don't have to answer this. But what would you do if your country was invaded again? Your country was invaded because the excuse this time was some terrorists financed by the Saudi royal family had taken up residence in your country and opened up training camps to train people to fight against the Christians who were destroying the Islamic world. So these people came from all over the Islamic world to be trained, and they were financed by the Saudis, the Saudi royal family, the Wahhabists, the really fundamentalist Muslims. And an attack occurred halfway around the world in a place that you have no connection to whatsoever, and the next thing you know, your country is being invaded. And people, your people, are being murdered, killed, butchered. Your children are being blown to pieces. Your families are dying. And you are told that this is being done to save you And then you find out that the president of the country that sent the invaders to your country and the king of Saudi Arabia, the royal family that provides the money to train these so-called terrorists in your country, that they are business partners. Their families hang out together. At what point, once you realize that, do you go insane? Because the king of Saudi Arabia, the king, the royal family in Saudi Arabia that provides the money for the training camps in your country, also hangs out with and finances the president of the other country that comes to your country to kill and destroy. How do you process that? How do you reconcile that? How do you deal with that as you're trying to find the head or the arms of your child? How do you do that? If the plans were changed. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Gordon, Oklahoma City. And you are invited to check out his blog site. Thanks, Gordon. Next hour, we're going to continue the discussion about Afghanistan and Iraq. A little bit different angle from what we've just been talking about. The money angle. There's a report out right now, Commission on Wartime Contracting. We're going to talk about that. You will be stunned. Well, no, you won't. No, you won't. You people are pretty hip. Not you right-wingers. Shut up. I'm not talking about you. You little trolls that listen to the program. Go away. One last thing. This hour, I think I can squeeze this in. Mike Huckabee, the preacher. Possible Republican candidate, presidential candidate in 2012, he said on Monday, we mentioned this the other night, that he would love to know more about where President Obama was born, and he claimed falsely that Obama was raised in Kenya. What happened was he was on one of these fourth or fifth tier right-wing talk shows that out of New Jersey. Hosted by Steve Malzenberg. Malzenberg asked Huckabee, how come we don't have a health record? We don't have a college record. We don't have a birth certificate. Why, Mr. Obama, did you spend millions of dollars in courts all over this country to defend against having to present a birth certificate? You see what these half-wits do? This Malzenberg, why did you have to spend millions of dollars in courts all over this country? Jesus Christ, these booger brains, I mean, they're just out of their minds. He's just an evil little twit, Malzenberg. Well, Huckabee answered this freak, and he said, well, you know, I'd love to know more. What I know is troubling enough. Now, remember, Huckabee works for the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and therefore is a terrorist himself by association. The moron, no, not Mulskenberg, but Huckabee said, quote, if you think about it, his perspective is growing up in Kenya with a Kenyan father and grandfather. Their view of the Mau Mau revolution in Kenya is very different from ours because he probably grew up hearing that the British were a bunch of imperialists. Yada, yada, yada. Of course, Obama did not grow up in Kenya, and he didn't know his father. But you see, the right-wingers, they don't care. Even some piece of dreck like Huckabee, who claims to be a preacher, former governor of Arkansas, just an out-of-control son of a bitch who wanders around, goes on these third, fourth, fifth-rated talk shows with some freak like this Mulskenberg, and between the two of them, they spew this garbage out over the airwaves in New Jersey and New York. And rational people that may hear this go, oh, my God, you know, and turn it off immediately. It's just unbelievable, unbelievable. I mean, to continue down this road that these right-wing freaks have built, you know, full of great lumps of cow droppings and horse manure that they have constructed about Obama's birth certificate. Oh my God. It's just astonishing. So then you get some freak like Huckabee, who is willing to play off the garbage that comes out of this Mulskenberger's mouth. Why has the president spent millions of dollars in courts all over the country hiding his birth certificate? Jesus Christ, and they allow that on the radio, see? WOR, which is another nest of skanks and skunks, they allow that to go out on the radio. Why not? Why not? Huckabee. Huckabee. I'll tell you what, Huckabee, why don't you talk about your deep and abiding sorrow? You're a great Christian pastor, aren't you? Your deep and abiding sorrow over the nine children that were butchered yesterday in Afghanistan that were out picking up firewood. Talk about that, Mr. Huckabee. Don't you have children and grandchildren yourself? Could you handle, Mr. Huckabee, trying to find the head of one of your grandchildren that had been blown off by an invading gunship? Could you do that? Would you, after you push the head onto the little corpse, would you then go on this Mulskenberger's program and start talking about whether or not Obama had a birth certificate? You sick bastards. We'll be back. Stick around. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour here on the Molloy program. Thanks for sticking around. I know it's late and you got to go to bed, right? You don't have to play the music again. That's right. Thank you. A couple of things here during this last part of the program. I mentioned this a little bit earlier tonight, but we all know that one of the biggest rackets on earth is war. Smedley Butler wrote a piece about that 100 years ago. General Smedley Butler, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, combat, Marine combat veteran, yada, 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 yada. We know that war is a racket, and we also know that the people that benefit are every single one some form of capitalist or corporatist scam. I mean, that's you never hear of, in the United States anyway, you never hear of some socialist, democratic socialist or market socialist who decides to go into a war zone where we have invaded and are occupying a foreign country and start making money any way the corporation can. But you see, that's the personal property of corporate America. That's where they go to make a lot of money. That's why war is perpetual. That's why it never stops. Corporations get to the point, the capitalists get to the point where they're sitting around on their great big piles of money, just like the old Scrooge McDuck cartoon. Same thing. What? You don't know what I'm talking about? Scrooge McDuck? Really? Are you that young? Ah, God. Anyway, so the capitalists sit around on these great big mountains of money, and when they decide that they want to increase the mountain of money, what's the quickest way to do it? Well, there's a couple of ways. One way is to close your business, your capitalist business, in, let's pick a country. Close it in the United States. That was right on the tip of my tongue. And eliminate a million jobs and then send the physical plant and the managers to a country where people make 1/20th or 1/50th of what the American worker makes. And all of a sudden, you know, it takes a little while to strip everything down. If you want to see how this works, you can go to a number of cities in the Rust Belt, the former industrious Midwest. Go to Toledo, go to Flint, Michigan, go to, just pick one and take a look. Or go back and look at one of Michael Moore's documentary films. So the capitalists say, okay, we're not making enough money. We've got billions. We're sitting our asses, our well-padded asses are sitting on billions of dollars. But that's not enough. It's not enough. We're still shy of a trillion. We want to get into that triple digit, that trillion thing. You know, with all the zeros. How are we going to do that? Well, you move the industrial base to a different country, or even more quickly, if you're really in a hurry, make a war. Start a war. Invade a country. Pick one. If they have natural resources in abundance, all the better. Like, oh, let me think. Recently, Iraq! Pick a country and invade it. And, you know, use the usual knee-jerk garbage that has not been true in this country in, oh, I don't know, how long has it been, truth seeker? I mean, really, go back over the history of U.S. involvement in wars, and you tell me which one was truly fought in the name of protecting this country and maintaining, mom and in her virginal state and apple pie, the smell of which wafts through the front door on a summer afternoon. You know, that garbage! Excuse me, I'm screaming again. So anyway, start a war. Invade a country, steal everything you can get your hands on, and then bring in the corpse eaters, the ghouls, the ones that really commit the predations, like Dick Cheney's organizations or Donald Rumsfeld's organizations, or the list just goes on and on. The war profiteers, Here they come. Just like maggots descending on a corpse rotting on a battlefield. Here they are. You ever see maggots run? That's kind of defies the imagination. Maggots move very slowly, unless they are the maggots from Halliburton or Kellogg Brown and Root. They move very quickly. So, whenever capitalist America, or capitalist Germany, or capitalist China, or capitalist Japan, or capitalist... pick one. Jesus Christ. I mean, they're all over the planet. Pick one. But since we are Americans, let's stick with ours. Whenever capitalist America decides it wants to go commit murder and mayhem and take another generation of hapless Americans and say, well, you're going to go out here and become a hero. You're going to go defend mom and apple pie wafting through the front door in the summer afternoon. You're going to defend the flag. You're going to do this and you're going to do that. Amen, amen. You're going to come back with battle ribbons on your chest and medals and everything and no legs and no arms and your face will be blown away and you might as well have died on the battlefield, soldier. But you've heard it all. You've heard it all, haven't you? So whenever capitalist America wants money, really wants money, war. And the confusion and the blood and the smoke and the death of war, it's very easy to steal, loot, pillage. So waiting in the wings are all these U.S. corporations, these capitalist organizations that are just waiting. Now, they don't. It's not inactive waiting. They are pumping the war fever into the country as they decide how they're going to pillage, loot, steal, you know. And sometimes it's because, well, Iraq attacked that little old Kuwait. Did you know that? Oh, my God, we can't have that happen. No, 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 no. Well, but China attacked all these little provinces, too. What about Tibet? What about, look over here. Look over here. China, we don't want to interfere in the internal affairs of another country. So we have Iraq, and we have Afghanistan. Well, what did Afghanistan do? Well, they had the Taliban, these religious freaks, and they blew up the Buddhist temples, and can you believe this stuff? And, yeah, but people have been trying to, you know, dislodge the religious crazies in Afghanistan since Alexander the Great, right? So anyway, the stage is set. A U.S. expeditionary force is going to go in and right all the wrongs, save the babies, and liberate the women, and educate the men, and set up schools and, you know, roads, bridges, dams, airports, teach everyone that it's not proper to wear white after Labor Day. That's the goal. So the troops are called, and the horns are blown, and the drums are beat, and off they go. And what happens next? I mean, we have the fun part right at the beginning where a lot of people are butchered and turned into red mist. That's when the bombs go off, and you get to hear it on this program. Every year on the anniversary, we play it for you, of the bombing of Baghdad, the invasion, the destruction. If you listen to that audio, sometimes, way in the background when I play it, I think I can hear screams, you know, the screams of dying people, which is kind of musical when you get right down to it. It's kind of a connection to the infinite, if you know what I'm talking about. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you think what I just said was insane. If you do know what I'm talking about, we'll continue in a minute.
your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond.
21 past the hour. So, war's a racket. It's a way to fill up the petty cash boxes real fast at the very beginning for capitalist America. And then as the war progresses, you know, if you can keep a war going for a couple, 3 years, you start to make the heavy money. If you if you can keep it going 5, 10, 8, 9, somewhere around there, then you really start to make a profit. Because by then, the capitalist organizations have inserted themselves into not just the territory that we have invaded and are now attempting to occupy, but also into the infrastructure of the usually puppet regime that we have put in place to grease the skids for us a little bit, if you will. Of course, there's always resistance. You ever notice that? There's always in Vietnam, they called it the Viet Cong. Viet Cong. In the Philippines, back at the turn of the last century, there was resistance in, you find it all over the place. In Afghanistan, we've named it. In Iraq, we've named it. We always name the resistance. No, we always give them a scary name, Al-Qaeda. Whew. Al-Qaeda. You can't say that without baring your teeth. Have you noticed that? Al-Qaeda. Taliban. The Taliban. Try to say that without your fangs popping out. So we do that. We did to the any country. Anytime we invade a country or go to war with a country, we turn the opposition forces into beasts. We're never beasts. We don't commit atrocities. We don't torture. We don't do this. We don't do, you know. So here we are in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a new study. There's always a new study, isn't there? This study is called the Commission on Wartime Contracting. Now, this was established by Congress in 2008 under the model of the Truman Commission during World War II, which investigated U.S. government spending during that conflict. You know, when you set up a new commission, in order to figure out the structure, you just go back a few years and you find the previous one. You go back a few years, you find the one previous to that. You go back a few more years, you find the one previous to the previous one. And then you find the previous one to the previous one of that. These commissions are always there. And they're great fun for the people who sit on the commissions. It's temporary employment. They get to do stuff, you know, get to travel a little bit. Well, I think we're going to have to go to Afghanistan. Then they get a battalion of Marines to protect them while they go. And, travel, take the wife, take the old lady, take the girlfriend. And in some cases, take the boyfriend, take the husband, whatever. You know, let's go see. These commissions are great. They never do anything. They don't mean anything. But this is how capitalist America, through its shills in Congress, keeps the game going. So that you and I sit back and say, oh, well, see, they've got a commission out there. They're going to find out about all this wasteful spending. Well, we have a new one now, and it's released its report. Maybe an interim report. Commission on Wartime Contracting. And the initial report indicates that the losses to fraud alone, just fraud. We're not talking about theft. We're not talking about, the pallets full of $100 bills that disappeared, billions in fraud alone. The loss in Iraq and Afghanistan is as high as $12 billion. Now, that's just fraud. Don't run and, you know, tell your husband, God, you ought to hear what Malloy just said, $12 billion. There's more, much more. Of course, that's the first part, $12 billion. Fraud. Now, with all this talk up there in the independent state of Wisconsin, all the talk about ending this and destroying that. All the talk in Ohio, all the talk in Pennsylvania now, and New Jersey, all over the place. Well, we have to shut that down. We have to throw people off the state-sponsored Medicaid rolls. We have to end collective bargaining. We have to fire everybody. We got a little bit. With all that talk, can you imagine if somebody went to the governors of Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey? I think they're all Republican now, right? And just said, okay, boys, because they're all boys. No, they're not men. Okay, boys, we have $12 billion here. Will that help? Can you imagine what the governors of those four states would say? We'll be right back.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Corruption and waste has cost the U.S. government billions of reconstruction dollars in Iraq and Afghanistan, according to the Commission on Wartime Contracting. This report that was released last Thursday or Friday, I believe. Did you hear about it? Of course not. So, $12 billion just in fraud, $12 billion stolen, misappropriated. I love these words, misappropriated. Let's use the right words. Stolen, stuffed into the pockets of the war profiteers. How else are you going to put it and retain any self-respect, right? So, an image in your mind of war profiteers, white men, from the United States capitalist class, stuffing money into their pockets, stuffing it into their pockets in some godforsaken place where we have invaded and sent our young boys and young girls now to go die and have their arms and legs blown off. If you have that image of the white man, middle-aged, usually surrounded by guys in sunglasses and camo, private contractors, of course, armed more fully than a platoon during the Korean War, more firepower than you get the point. Stuffing money into their pockets, stuffing it. Then you have a pretty good image of what has happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. It happens yet again. The next war we have, well, we're talking about invading Libya now. Well, Libya, that would be a good one. Libya has more oil than any country in Africa. You know what's really fun? Talking about Libya is the dumbasses, the right-wingers, have no idea. I remember one time I got an email from somebody some woman who furiously attacked me for saying that Egypt was an African country. You remember that, Kathy?
Must have been a Bush family member.
I think so. Now it's going to be Libya. What do you mean? Libya isn't that's not Africa.
Well, I don't speak Libyan.
But I digress. So Libya's next on the radar screen. Now, does Muammar Gaddafi deserve to be hanged from a lamppost like Mussolini? Of course he does. But the Libyans ought to do it. You ought to drag him out in the street, stomp him to death, and hang him from a lamppost. That's what they did to Mussolini, finally, when the Italians had enough, right? They would have done. Germans probably would have done it to Hitler. Well, I don't know about that. Well, yeah, they would have. But Hitler, you know, in the mouth. So Libya is probably next on the radar screen here. But let us concern ourselves with Afghanistan and Iraq, because that's an ongoing money hole for these filthy, goddamn American contractors who, in my opinion, should be shot on the spot. No, seriously. Like the scene, remember in the movie Slaughterhouse-Five? It's in the book, too, but in the movie where the American POW in Dresden, after the firebombing, Schlossenhaus-Vieren, and they're taken out to help clear the rubble, the American soldiers, the POWs. And this poor hapless bastard finds one of those beautiful little Dresden porcelain dolls in the rubble. And, of course, the Nazi troops are standing around overseeing the Americans' work. And this poor schlub picks up the little porcelain doll, and it's so beautiful. The camera comes down on a beautiful little Dresden doll. And the guy puts it in his pocket. A little doll. A little piece of porcelain. Puts it in his pocket. Hey, look. Look, Billy, look. Look at this. Billy Pilgrim is standing over there. So they, a couple of the soldiers see this, and they come over and immediately hook their arms around him, his, and furiously backpedal him to the nearest wall and shoot him dead. That is exactly and precisely the way it should be done in Iraq and Afghanistan to the American contractors who steal money. No. First of all, it's got to be summary justice. There is no justice in Iraq and Afghanistan unless you want to go before a lawyer jirga. What's that? You know, there is no justice. There is no legal system except one that's been in place for thousands of years and very tribal and so on and so forth and yada yada. And I could go on into that little corner for the next 20 minutes, but I'll spare you. So, an American contractor who is stealing, shoot the son of a bitch on the spot, right up against the wall. Bang! Why not? They're the ones who have caused the war. They're the ones who have beat the drums to get 19 and 18-year-olds to sign up to go fight for freedom in America and independence and glory and hallelujah. And the contractors are sitting back there. The capitalists are going, that's right, you dumb little bastards. That's right. Go, go, go. Go, go. So when we get a report like this, Commission on Wartime Contracting, we get sentences like this from the report. Quote, when it comes to oversight of contingency contracting, we've been driving beyond the reach of our headlights. Reforms are badly needed. For many years, the government has abdicated its contracting responsibilities, too often using contractors as the default mechanism, without consideration for the resources needed to manage them. You know what the resources are needed to manage the contractors? Well-armed police of a sort who are instructed when you see the thievery up against the wall and execute them. The report has not come up with exact figures yet, but it's toying with the idea of nearly $200 billion. Now, let's go back to the governors again. We were talking $12 billion a minute ago for those four states that are in dire shape. They say they're in dire shape to the extent that they want to destroy collective bargaining. They want to throw people off the Medicaid rolls. They want to end public or state financing of anything that goes toward early learning programs for kids that desperately need it, or nutrition programs for women, infants, children, and on and on and on. All this stuff has got to be stopped, got to be gutted, got to be ended, because we need
need money.
Okay. Here, goddammit, I'll give you $200 billion. Of course, in order to get it, you're going to have to do something you might find a little distasteful, at least for the first minute, and that is shoot the son of a bitches who stole it. Have you got the nerve? Can you do that? In Slaughterhouse 5, it took the Nazi soldiers about, 20 seconds. Look, the American has stuck in his pocket something that doesn't belong to him. A doll. A Dresden porcelain doll. Kill him now. Okay. So, do you, truth seeker, have what it takes to take a look at the thievery? Do you know how many contractors we have in Iraq and Afghanistan? Contractors. I'm not talking about soldiers. Contractors.
The commission offers 32 recommendations to improve the situation in both Iraq and Afghanistan, where some 200,000 people are employed by subcontractors, including a decrease in dependence on private security and an increase in competition between subcontractors to lower prices.
Do you get that sentence? Do you get that? Aside from the 200,000 people employed by contractors, subcontractors, do you get that next part of the sentence? It's a compound sentence, you right-wing dumbasses. Including a decrease in dependence on private security and an increase in competition between subcontractors to lower prices. We're talking about a war zone. We're talking about where orphans are produced daily. We're talking about where children are blown into red gristle by the minute. We're talking about an area that has been bombed and rebombed and bombed yet again, over and over. And at the same time, with the same breath, we're talking about an increase in competition between subcontractors in that section of hell to lower prices. So there won't be as much stealing? What did Greg Palast say? We live in an armed madhouse. Is there any way to make that sound worse? I mean, armed madhouse is pretty, what do you call it then when we send our expeditionary forces of capitalist subcontractors to another country to do this? What do you call this? Anybody got any ideas? Before the hour. So if you get a chance, look it up. Commission on Wartime Contracting. It is the latest report to find criminal behavior and blatant corruption. Their words, not mine. responsible for the waste related to the nearly $200 billion spent since 2002 on U.S. reconstruction and other projects in Iraq and Afghanistan. And when you finish, or before you read it, I would challenge you, I challenge myself on this, to find a project. Now, I'm not talking about the projects funded by donations, contributions by charitable or human rights organizations to build a school someplace, or individuals to build a school someplace, or to provide desks or shoes. I'm not talking about that. I would challenge you, as I challenge myself, to find one project, one. That's all. Just one. Just one. We invaded and have been occupying Afghanistan since, what, 2002. We invaded and have been occupying Iraq since 2003. One project, just one, one in either country, just one, that was funded properly, that was using the word that we've all come to accept as valid, that was reconstructed. Now, what does reconstructed mean? Yeah, something that was constructed, and for some strange reason, it was knocked down and had to be reconstructed. Find a reconstruction project. Anything. Anything. Anything relating to infrastructure in either country. Arguably, in Afghanistan, what infrastructure are they talking about? Sewer systems don't exist. Electric grids, you got to be kidding. Power plants, what? Burning camel dung? Come on. And that's not arrogance on my part. That is not an imperialistic attitude. That is just stating the facts on the ground, right? What are they talking about where it concerns reconstruction projects? A bridge someplace, a road project, and what's the road for? So that the happy Afghans or the miserable Iraqis can bring their wares to market? Or is the road constructed so that U.S. troops can roll along merrily to find someplace else to investigate for capitalist America? You get the point. I'm way overstating it here, and it's probably getting tiresome. But find something. I can't. Find a project that we can look at and say, well, goddamn, look here. I mean, in World War II, after World War II, we had the Marshall Plan. We had some equivalent, didn't we, where it concerned East Asia after that horrible theater of war. But show me something, somebody, because I've looked, I can't find something in Afghanistan or Iraq. I know they must exist. For Christ's sake, we are approaching $1 trillion on the cost of destroying and rebuilding those two countries. Creative destruction, don't you love that term, for the sake of capitalism. Can you find one? If you do, send it a link to it. Send it to mike@mikemalloy.com. Try to include pictures, because I'd like to see it. I really would. Something that the United States has done to justify the almost $1 trillion we have spent, other than taking out Saddam Hussein and hanging him. Okay? Other than that. All right? That was an expensive piece of rope, wasn't it?
And that doesn't count the human cost.
Well, no, you don't dare count the human cost. How do you put a value on the life of a 20-year-old soldier from El Paso named Jesus Gonzalez, who, on a track to gain citizenship in the United States for himself and his spouse and his baby, joins the United States Marine Corps and goes to Afghanistan and is blown into chunks of bone and gristle. How do you put a price, a value, on that kid's life? There's no way, and there never has been a way, to assess the human cost. Because Jesus might have been the one, had he not been on a path to U.S. citizenship, go kill Afghans. He might have been the one who found the genetic combination that unlocked the really evil secrets of cancer cells, you know? So you never know. You never know what Jesus might have done. Or Willie, or John, or anybody. Or Sarah, or Sheila, or Aida. So, when we consider the cost of our adventures, our wars of opportunity, these two in particular, there's no way to consider the human cost. What about the cost of the child who is blown into chunks of blood and meat inside his parents' car because his parents did not slow down at a checkpoint because they didn't understand the language? How do you do that? So if you get a chance, the name of the report is Commission on Wartime Contracting. Commission on what? Yes, another one. A chance for you to decide if Smedley Butler was right when he said so famously a century ago, war is a racket. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.